Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Henrik Palmgren. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. We are coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. Nice to have you along today. You can hear us on Thursdays and Sundays through our website, redicecreations.com, where we also feature news, links, articles, other resources from around the world and beyond. Also, don't forget, we have a growing member section loaded with material for you. Our full radio archive, of course, with extended interviews with many of our guests, but also videos, short films, articles, and much more. We have Rick Play back with us on the program today as a follow-up to the two segments that we did this past Sunday. We talked about Sion, the upcoming Olympic Games in Beijing and in London, and how all of this kind of connects with 2012 and leading up to the introduction, if you will, of the new trinity of sorts with the Prince William, or maybe around 2012 King William, as the deity of the religion for the new aeon. And today we're going to follow up on this program and discuss some more things that we didn't get into in so much depth. I have a few questions and comments on what we didn't talk about last time. So if you haven't heard part one, I suggest you go back into our archive, listen, so you know what we're talking about here. And we can preface this show, of course, with saying that Rick is behind the blog The Cosmic Mind. You can find that by simply going to thecosmicmind.blogspot.com. And there you'll find many of the articles that we will be addressing in this program. So with that, welcome back to the program, Rick. Glad to have you back again. How is it?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. You?
Nice. Did you have a chance to ease down since last Sunday when we talked?
I think my brain exploded, but I've managed to piece it back together again. it was a mammoth session.
Yeah, it was definitely. I mean, you presented basically the thesis and overall research that you've been doing for the last half year, I guess, here. But very, very fascinating, very interesting. And today we're going to go back to some of the keynotes and talk a little bit more about that. But have you gotten any feedback on the show that we did so far?
I've had some quite positive feedback. There's been people message me on the blog, and I've received some emails as well. Obviously, some that are not in complete agreement with what I've been saying, but that's fair enough, because I'm not saying that this is gospel or anything. I'm just saying this is how I see it.
Yeah, of course. What is the disagreements about mainly?
I'm not sure. I mean, from what I gather, some of the messages are kind of coming much from the matter before mind scientific viewpoint, as opposed to, you know, the alternate viewpoint that the mind before matter situation.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I think I read on your blog a little bit about that, and that was, I think it was in regards to numerology, that there are kind of specific rules that you have to follow and whatnot. But from what I can kind of pick out on all of this so far is that this is not about so much rules and a discipline in that sense. This is more about actually this is stuff that speaks to the subconscious. This is stuff that triggers the right brain, if you will, and not the analytical left brain.
So, yeah, completely.
So in a way, this is not about just sticking to certain rules. It's about just pointing out what it is that you're discovering, right?
Yeah, exactly. Someone had proposed that the method to numerology is just simply to, you know, add the numbers up as you go along. And obviously, you know, there probably is a certain method to numerology, which, I mean, I might not be familiar with, but all I can say is that this is different in the sense this is numbers in the universe, and, you know, I mean, there is number play from specific people as well. It doesn't abide to any particular rule. That's the thing. It's as they wish to present it.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
As whoever wishes to present it.
Well, exactly, and even the idea of if we think of the universe or creation as a holographic thing or a fractal thing, in a way, then it actually doesn't matter what area you look into or how you make the connections. In a way, this is just about if you're, you know, have the consciousness to discover the connections or the similarities, then that's the pattern, that is the, you know, the discovery right there, you know.
Yeah, it is something at the root of consciousness. That, I mean, that's how I can, that's all I see it as. It's there, permeates everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I want to begin to talk a little bit more about the Olympics and ask you a little bit about you know, basically why you think that the Olympic Games is such an important event, or rather why they have made the Olympic Games such an important event. Any ideas or theories about that?
Well, I mean, obviously the Olympics, it stems back thousands of years, and it started off as a pagan games, if you like, where, you know, all the athletes and stuff would pay their respects to Zeus and Olympus. And obviously it seemed to, like, through the ages and stuff, it died out, and then there was the resurrection. I can't particularly name the member, the man who started the modern Olympic Games, but again, it was, you know, a Freemason, esoteric worker of sorts, and obviously wanted to bring them back. and with the 2012 Olympics, obviously we've got and obviously what I've discovered with the ley lines and stuff, where the particular site is, we've got this situation where it's clearly involving energy.
Indeed. And you know, one thing here that is interesting, you mentioned the Greek background on all this, and of course there is a connection between, if we go back to the Roman world, that connects with the Grecian world, and then we can go back to the Egyptian world, or the Phoenician, yeah, or Canaanite, or what have you, basically there,
yeah,
or even the Druid or Celtic religion. But
yeah, of course.
One interesting article that actually picked up on this was from The Guardian back in 2006 in May, called "Greek Gods Prepare for Comeback," and the beginning of the article stated that it has taken almost 2,000 years, but those who worship the 12 gods of the ancient Greece have finally triumphed, and Athens' court has ordered that the adulation of Zeus, Hera, Hermes, Athena, and the companies to be unbanned, paving the way for a comeback of pagans on Mount Olympus. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting, considering what
pretty
you're talking
wild
about. Yeah.
It's so, a bit like the opening ceremony itself. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it this year, but obviously the opening ceremony involves 11 women that are all, like, dressed up like snake charmers of sorts, and they actually light the Olympic flame with the sun. They get a parabolic mirror and, you know, light the flame. It's all you know, involving the sun and the stars, and, you know, as it is in a pagan religion, they're personified as gods.
Ah, exactly, and that's very interesting that you mentioned that, because the origins of the Olympic flame, I mean, that's very interesting why that is. I mean, to a certain degree, I draw that back to the Promethean mythology of actually stealing the fire from the gods, or taking, yeah, the knowledge from the gods, and then utilizing that in the human world. What's your idea, yeah, about the flame?
Well, I think, evident from the Olympic torch relay, I mean, it's clearly some kind of ritual. If you, for instance, observe where the Olympic torch is run, for instance, in Paris, the Olympic torch took a route down the Champs-Élysées, down the energy line, straight forward towards the Louvre Pyramid. And then, same situation in London. It did the torch did a visitation of all the significant sites in London, associated with the obelisks and the London Eye and the Natural History Museum. And then, if you, for instance, look where it's going to end up, on June the 21st, which is the summer solstice this year, the torch is going to be running through Lhasa in Tibet.
There you go, yeah.
So, I mean, given the commotion around the Free Tibet and the Tibetan uprisings and everything that's gone with it with China, yeah, it's quite coincidental that they should be taking the torch to Tibet on the summer solstice.
That's very interesting. and exactly, they have these... I've not actually kept up with that much with what's going on over there right now, but they had this called the Saffron Revolution, I guess it was referred to. And... it seems to be, at least, I don't know if you're familiar with the research of Goro Adachi over at Menanke, but he has kind of tracked this with the different type of revolutions that have been going on in the last few years, like the Orange Revolution, you know, in Ukraine. Yeah. I think you had the Rose Revolution in Georgia. So there's something definitely going on there in regards to different revolution and how energy, yeah, to a certain extent, is being used, you know?
Well, I mean, in the... I've got my suspicions about the whole event in Burma, for instance, with the monks. You know, the moment you see George Bush on TV speaking about democracy while they're in Iraq, you know, basically drilling on the monks to keep with the protests and stuff. There's something very strange going on with you know, our leaders and this connection with spiritual leaders and the spirit itself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Continue.
Yeah, sorry, that's it.
Okay, yeah. Noah, I mean, I wanted to address also the Dalai Lama a little bit, because he seems to be a very how should we put it? Eclectic character. He doesn't seem to abide by the rules of the old Dalai Lamas in a way.
Well,
no,
he's I mean, he's a very suspicious chap. Cause first of all, he laughs like Yoda from Star Wars. But aside from that, I dug up a recent picture of him, and as I mentioned about the Tibetan flag before, obviously showing the pyramid and the sun, or the mountain as the sun, as they put it. And there's a picture himself of the Dalai Lama, and he's been placed on a plateau, and in his head is directly in line with the sun, and obviously, you know, this is sun worship personified in the Dalai Lama. Like, that's the energy's being thrown his way, essentially. And then, for instance, you look at that particular character and his visit to the UK. I mean, he made an 11-day visit to the UK, and as I talk about the significance of the number 11 before,
yeah,
it's, those numbers are there in what's going on with all of this.
Definitely, and the Dalai Lama has advocated microchipping. I remember an article a while back, and apparently he's suggested, or maybe it was a comment by someone who asked him, and he wouldn't seem that would be any problem. You know, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's a lot of this stuff going on, and even going back to the Saffron Revolution or the different revolutions that have been ongoing, it's also interesting that a lot of the whole other world are getting involved in those kinds of revolutions too. I remember a while back everyone was wearing this you know, the red ribbon or whatever it might be. It's always to kind of to get you involved in what is going on and to kind of put energy into the system. Do you think that's a consciously manipulated thing behind the scenes, that okay, let's utilize this situation and actually feed energy into this spot or into this event? Do you think that's possible?
I think that's definitely happening. I mean, this, I mean, touches into areas that Matthew Deleuze again is quite famous for. But for instance, if you look in Britain during the winter time, and you observe your central cities like Manchester, Leeds, London, they always bring out the ice skating rinks, and the ice skating rinks are always between obelisks. Do you know what I mean? It's by the symbolic events and stuff, and they draw people into these events, like you say, with the revolutions and stuff. Same with music festivals, same with like New Year's Eve celebrations. They're always drawing people into these events, to these areas, and obviously feeding energy off it.
And I mean, you mentioned energy. Do you think that this also is an opportunity then to affect the mass consciousness in a big way? I mean, if we look at, again, if we go back to the Olympics, there we have, of course, a lot of people both attending the event, of course, but also watching it through TV.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. The Olympics 2012, I mean, for me, is going to be the, and it already has started being, is going to be this, you know, it's one of the biggest energetic events that we'll ever have seen, I think. It's going to be grand.
And
be very grand.
I don't know if you've heard of Tim Rifat, but I had a clip of him up on the website a few years ago now, I actually think, but he talked about the new digital system going in also with the new signals of the TV, you know?
Yeah, I've heard about this, some new form of interactivity and everything that goes with it, chip microchips and the lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's quite, there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of things, for instance, they keep putting suspect message out about just everything associated with it, like Gordon Brown and his mention of that by 2012. And if you remember my talk last time, I was talking about the water ring and moving into the age of the water spirit, kind of
age of Aquarius.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, Gordon Brown made a mention the other day that by 2012 the people of the UK will have free swimming for all. No, I mean, I've never heard anything so sus in my life, given what I'd been researching at the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, never, declaration of free swimming for everyone. I don't know what that insinuates, but
well, I mean, obviously that draws the mind towards the idea of global warming, increased water, you know, and London submerged, you know, halfway underwater or whatever. I don't know what.
I don't know what that brings up, to be honest, either. It's interesting though.
It's very interesting, and. Even the use of water, or you know, if we look on global warming, that this is much about flooding, the ice melting. In a way, the symbolic message here is that our planet is entering the age of water, or age of Aquarius, yeah. Because we're being drowned, you know, in a way.
Definitely. I mean, that's the thing you always have to wonder about. For instance, with what I spoke about before, saying that the religion of the New World Order as such is going to be like a new religion based on spirituality, but obviously with a sun worship personified in man, so it's like a new messiah. And you've got to wonder, like, how does this supposed spiritual ascension go about? I mean, does it necessarily mean that we stay in this 3D material plane? I mean, it could be that the whole, you know, planet is suffered with a huge water chaos. You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, that could be the method of ascension. I don't know. It's an interesting thought, and obviously we don't really know what's going to happen as such.
So what you're saying is that whatever happens, even if that is manipulated, I mean, it still potentially means the same thing in the end, because we're going to go through that experience no matter what, and we're going to... well, I mean, what I'm getting at, I guess, is that many people who look at what's going on say, okay, it's manipulated, this is all a fraud or whatever, but it might still be a way for the universe, if you will, to have us to have, you know, to get us to have that experience.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I am under the, I mean, my personal kind of opinion on all of this is that There is evidence that this has been manipulated, but then there is evidence though that maybe it's not been manipulated. Maybe this information has just been kept from us, and they've known this information and they're just not willing to share it with us.
Yeah.
And for instance, like you know, you look at what I was saying about Prince William, for instance, and you know, him being the figurehead of this new religion. I mean, I have no idea how they could actually, you know, make it so that Prince William was born on the 21st of June.
I've heard about that, and I think that they went through some kind of. I know that there were planning involved in some way, and they also tried to really. I don't know the technique or even the terminology behind this in English, but I know that there were some kind of technique involved into actually delaying or postponing, depending on how far Diana was in the pregnancy. You know.
So it was planned then, essentially, if that information's out there.
I think it was planned, yes, to get it on that date.
I've not looked into it that far as like, you know, his birth and stuff like that, but it's interesting. I mean, maybe it can be done.
Exactly.
And that could lead me on to, I mean, would you like me to tell you about my findings today?
Yeah, do that, please. Go ahead.
Because obviously I'd already stated that... The 2012 Olympics is the XXX Olympiad, and it's obviously the 30th Olympiad. And Prince William's birthday is the 21st of June, and on that day in 2012, he is 30, which is essentially XXX yet again. And looking for a new bit of information to come on the show, I decided that I was going to try and crack this XXX code, if you like.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've dug something up quite interesting. X is derived from a Greek letter, which is chi.
Mm-hmm.
Chi is the 22nd letter of the Greek alphabet.
Yeah.
So 22 obviously could be 11-11 if you wanted it to be like that.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you know anything about the history of qi, obviously in Chinese and Japanese, it's qi, which is essentially like reiki, life force energy. It's a spirit. It's the name for spirit, the energy that moves the life of the planet. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so looking into this a bit further, on the Wikipedia page, you believe it, but there's a reference to Plato, and obviously Plato, we don't really know too much about him apart from he was an esoteric philosopher, And he refers to chi or X. I mean, chi does look like X. It's the same thing as the soul of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you've got here is the soul of the world, translated in Latin, is anima mundi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry, that's the term for it, anima mundi. That's what Plato is referring to, which is the world soul.
Yeah.
Which is also Gaia. You know, the Gaia Earth theory, the living Earth and Mother Goddess. And Gaia can be identified with Isis.
Mm.
So Plato refers to X as anima mundi, which is essentially identified with Isis. And then you can also look into X again, and it's used to abbreviate the name of Christ in Christmas.
Mm.
So you have Xmas when you're writing down Xmas.
Yeah.
And then, so essentially what you've got there is you've got Isis, and you've got your sun figure, or your Horus figure, you've got your Isis.
Hmm.
If you want to try and attribute X to God, or to the Father, in human genetics, the male creates the X chromosome.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
So essentially with the XXX, you've got, you know, the Father, the Holy Spirit, and or the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
But it's all male then, it's all masculine, right?
Well, not really, not necessarily, because okay. one of the exes is Isis.
Mm.
The Holy Spirit.
Oh yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
You know, the same Isis can be identified with the angel Gabriel. Angel Gabriel identified with the Holy Spirit.
Mm.
Holy Spirit, yeah. So basically, yeah, you've got a trinity there in the words XXX itself.
Hmm.
Then if you look into it even further, because obviously the Chinese equivalent of it is qi, meaning X in Chinese and stuff, but the word, the area of where the optic vision crosses over is the optic chiasm, which is obviously, it got its name from the X, because basically eyesight crosses over and forms an X inside your brain.
Yeah.
But incidentally, where the two lines of sight cross over is where the pineal gland resides.
Hmm.
So basically what you've got in the X as well is this connection to the pineal gland, the term for Chinese spirituality, and then you've got your trinity as well. And obviously your pineal gland's connected to your serotonin, melatonin and DMT secretion, which is supposedly the spirit molecule.
X marks the spot, right?
X marks the spot in the human brain.
Wow, that's really interesting actually, and the vision is really interesting too actually, that it's a reverse, and even of course if you unfold basically X in itself is an 11, but you know, two ones crossed over, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's new research that for me today, so that's why I've struggled a bit in getting it across. But for instance, if you look at what people stereotypically do on a greetings card or a birthday card, they put three crosses at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kiss, kiss, kiss.
Yeah.
And then if you think about the word kiss itself, it's ki, which is derived from the same word, spirit,
mm-hmm.
and then two S's, which are snakes, like the DNA coil.
Of course, interesting.
So kiss, kiss, kiss. When everyone's doing that on their Christmas cards, I don't know what they're exactly doing.
Exactly. No, that's very interesting. And, you know, this also a little bit goes back to the... I think it was Constantine, the Roman emperor, who developed the, the sign in the sky, the Chi Rho, or the XP, you know, in the sign Conquer. That's also connected with the X, of course.
Right, I'm not aware of that.
But. And it's, you know, it's a whole story behind the XP, and even Windows XP. There are a few researchers out there that goes into that.
There's bound to be something behind that one.
Yeah, exactly. They managed to conquer the entire market, as it were, almost on the operating system through XP, conquering in the sign.
Interestingly enough, talking about the what I was saying about the religion of the New World Order and utilizing the chakras and everything, the Windows, the new version of Windows that they're working on, which they're probably due to release in 2012, is Windows 7, which is obviously significant to the seven chakras as well.
Mm. Mm. That's interesting.
about Windows.
do you know if 7 is their the working name for it only?
They've not given it any other name apart from 7 at the moment.
Okay, yeah, because I know the Vista was called like Longhorn or something in the beginning. It's pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
XP was called Whistler or whatever it was, but
Whistler, yeah.
Anyway, okay. So, you know, Friedrich brought me a few notes here. It's pretty interesting about the Berlin Olympics, 1936, the first kind of, well, I mean...
Yeah, that's where the Olympic torch relay started, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. They managed to televise it, I think, for the first time ever. There's a whole stuff involved there, the Nazis, fascist background to all of this, of course, is very interesting. And apparently...
Do you know what number games it was?
The 11th, of course.
Yeah, of course.
X1, exactly. So what do we make of this?
It gets stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't get ridiculous.
It's incredible. No, it's very interesting. And let's see here. I did want to get into a little bit about the whole kind of temper thing going on there. But let's see. But before we do that, I want to ask you a little bit about Sion. A few comments about this. Okay. That the biblical connection, if you will, the use of biblical terminology, the theme. If you looked at the site in London that they're pulling together. Why do you think it is that they always refer back to the Bible and the biblical theme all the time? Why do you think that's important for them?
Well, I mean, I personally think that the work with the Bible is essentially, if you want to call it, an esoteric book that essentially depicted the plan. I think it's one of those things, like everything, it has to be in plain sight for it to, you know, really work.
Mm.
And that's all I can really attribute it with. I mean, I'm sure that the same people, like, who are responsible for... Oh, sorry, the same force that's responsible for empowering these 2012 Olympics are the same force that was behind the Bible.
So it's a long...
Continuous line.
Right. And...
I think it's been unbroken since the pyramid was built, to be honest. The Great Pyramid.
Are you talking about the bloodline or the power structure?
I think both.
Both, yeah.
Yeah, I do personally think both. I think, you know, when you're taught history in school, you're always taught, like, the individual little sections of history and all these different events and stuff. But, you know, it's even mentioned in, you know, your stereotypical esoteric book where they're referring to how it works, essentially, is that you have to view history as a whole, not as an individual, like, separate parts.
Yeah.
If you view it as a whole, then you'll get an understanding for it.
Mm, indeed, I totally agree. And I mean, continuing on that line, I just want to make a few comments regarding the whole Templar bloodline thing. We got into that a little bit, of course, in regards to that the when they potentially are producing or presenting this new Trinity, the new Holy Trinity with Prince William at the top, or King William. That they're also at the same time potentially are going to lay out this idea that the Windsors or this family line is the family line of Jesus, you know. Then we get into the whole bloodline Templar story here. And
I mean, I think essentially it had to come through Diana, though. Was it something to do with the House of Stuart? I think that's where the essential bloodline crossover came from.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to, from what I gather, they wanted to, you know, merge the Stuart bloodline into the Windsor bloodline.
Yeah. And with that merging, they get this... I mean, and again, you mentioned this the last time we talked, that in many cases it's common throughout history also to merge different dynasties in order to, in some cases, gain bigger empires. I mean, Ralph Ellis has talked about this, and one example we can talk about as a comparison to, let's say, Diana and Charleston would be actually like Cleopatra and Julius Caesar, you know, one coming from the Egyptian dynasty and one from the Roman Empire. But when these two get together, it the empire expands, it's become bigger, and it's accepted by both sides as well, you know. So it's a means to propel forth a new world order, basically, in that idea, or a one world order, you know.
Consumes everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And continuing then on that thread that I was mentioning regarding the bloodline there, that do you think it's possible also now that we could be witnessing then the reformation, if you will, of the Vatican invented religions? We can incorporate the Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, and Anglican Church, and Also, furthermore, I mean, the Templars have been embraced now again back into the Vatican after like 700 years of being excommunicated. The Orthodox Church has also been observed by the Vatican, and some people even claim that Islam is a creation of the Vatican. So what we're potentially are seeing now, and I don't know if you agree or not, you can comment on this if you want to, that what we're seeing is kind of the grand unification again of the Church, going back to this one uno, the monotheistic, mono-religion type thing going on here. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I mean, given what the Vatican recently said about extraterrestrials as well,
It
seems that they're obviously trying to get everything to fit the bill as such.
Indeed.
If you know what I mean. It's whereas before it was always thought that if extraterrestrials were to arrive, it would throw religion up in arms, which was the given story in the 90s, from what I gather.
Yeah.
It's now being spread as, well, no, it wouldn't do that. It'd reaffirm everything that we've said.
Well, exactly.
I mean, as far as the Vatican is concerned and the Roman Catholic is concerned, I've got very strong views in the sense of, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill, and yet that religion alone has personally, killed hundreds of thousands of people.
I'm
absolutely disgusted of what I read that they were doing in the, in the time of the Inquisitions, essentially. It was horrible, disturbing.
Of course, and if we look at the research of Eric Phelps, for instance, behind the book Vatican Assassins, we potentially can see clear connections to even all the wars, essentially. That's what he's talking about. I mean, First World War, Second World War, if we look at the involvement of the Roman Catholic Order of the Knights of Malta, then we know that people there are currently involved or have been involved in the invasion of Iraq. People at the top of Blackwater, for instance, that is the private mercenary army over there, has connections to all of this. I mean, it's what we have to ask ourselves in that sense is, okay, are these really kind of rogue, personalities or a small faction just involved in these kinds of war for personal gain in regards to profit from wars?
Mm.
Or is this a totally different thing going on here, going back to thousands of years into the religious structures and orders, and there might be a totally different reason for why them wanting to be in this region at this particular time,
Yeah, completely. I mean, I've got my doubts as to, for instance, why they're in Iraq. I don't think it's for anything to do with the oil, to be honest.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, I've got no personal answer as to what it could be, but I just don't think it's about the oil.
Some people talk about the, basically the return of the quote gods, unquote, that the
Anunnaki,
the Nephilim, the Watchers, what have you, is in some way returning, or even that this is a symbolic communication to them.
Planet
X. Well, exactly, Planet X. There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
So I mean, it's the thing is obviously wide open here, and what we're doing here is just kind of speculating and tossing around a lot of these different ideas. Yet again, if we go back to a kind of mundane and worldly thing like the Olympics, it seems to be a long stretch between these different things. And I mean, for someone who kind of don't get the idea of why the Olympics would be important in relations to this, what would you say to a person like that? Like, okay, you got to obviously do a lot of research, but is there an easy way to lay this forth for a person like that to, look at the Olympics?
For someone who... Sorry, I'm misinterpreting your question, I think. Could you repeat it?
Of course, yeah. What I'm asking is for someone to make a connection between a mundane thing, as it were, as the Olympics.
Right, okay.
And a huge area like this, the return of the gods, the Watchers, the Nephilim, what have you,
Okay.
Is there an easy path between these subjects?
Is there an easy path?
Yeah,
There isn't a three-word answer.
It obviously takes
a lot of interpretation. It takes a lot of time studying and stuff. And
of course,
for someone who's the uninitiated into doing any reading or research themselves, it's going to be a difficult thing to propose that. And it seems wild. I mean, I've said my theories on the Olympics 2012 to the uninitiated, and should see their eyebrows raised. it's not an easy one. It takes a good 20 minutes, to be honest, to even begin to get an understanding going on.
Well, obviously, and I know that my question there is kind of you know stupid in one extent, but in many cases it's that kind of instant gratification, so to speak, that some people want when they are researching this stuff. They don't realize that, okay, you actually have to spend a little time and energy to realize this. This isn't just a quick soundbite that you can use to wrap your head around. What we're talking about here is world history, you know, extending thousands of years, you know.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the Anunnaki, as I was mentioning before, there's some real clear-cut connections to everything that is probably to do with the Olympics 2012 in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Have you seen the film yourself?
Not yet, no.
Right, because obviously, these Hollywood films that we obviously get published, we never really know who the scriptwriters are for a start. We obviously know the directors and stuff, and the names attributed to scriptwriters, but we never really know who they are. And incidentally, do you ever know how many films have won 11 Oscars? There's only 3 films in history that have won 11 Oscars.
Okay, let me guess. Lord of the Rings?
Return of the King, yeah.
Okay, the Return of the King. Okay, well, this is difficult. What more can it be? Probably like Titanic or something?
Yeah, you got Titanic. Another conspiracy theory film there.
Yeah. And then 2001, Space Odyssey.
No, Ben-Hur, which is all about Jesus Christ.
Ah, really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlton Heston. But basically, yeah, it's obviously coincidental. Is it coincidental that there are only 3 films with 11 Oscars? Which make 33, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Huh.
And then, I mean, when it comes to Indiana Jones, as I was saying, I was in London about 2 months ago, and there's 3 buses that were 3 red buses that were advertising films that were going around, and like, you know, this 2012 stuff is starting to permeate everything, because like, of all the films that could have been on these buses, there was only 3 of them. One of them was Indiana Jones, which is released on May the 22nd, mm-hmm. which was 11/11. The other one was I Am Legend, which was set in 2012. If you remember that film.
Yeah, of course. Was it really set in 2012?
Yeah, it's set in 2012.
Oh, shit, I missed that totally. Yeah. That's very interesting. Okay, yeah.
And then the third film was The Eye.
Hmm.
Right, so basically, while I was in London, there's only 3 films advertised on these red buses, and it was those 3 films.
Yeah.
So obviously, Space Us. And I was over at the Bank of England, taking a good look at the coiled snakes on the door.
Yeah.
And basically, there's an underpass, and I started seeing it as soon as I went through all these other underpasses. But basically, there's these video screens, and they all had Indiana Jones on them. But incidentally, basically, at the end of each of these scenes, these video screens, rather than just like doing a scene swipe, the scene was cleared by the Mayan Aztec solar disks rolling across the screen.
Really?
So basically, all around the London Underground and all these screens was the Mayan calendar rolling around.
Hmm.
You know, but no public admittance that this is the Mayan calendar or anything.
Of course.
But incidentally, as well, all of these screens, and newly put in place screens, and they all had the CBS logo on them, which is of course an eye.
Yeah.
So basically, you had this weird thing going on in London when I went down, which obviously got me thinking about Indiana Jones, because I was adamant that there's going to be so much messagery in that film, so many messages in that film because of the amount of publicity that's been getting.
Of course.
And I mean, just a few things I've got them jotted down here, which I'm eventually going to be writing a big post about, because I think it warrants one, just like The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
But basically, there's 2 scenes in the film where you'll see the Mayan calendar. It's not put on show, or it's not mentioned or anything, but there's a scene where Indiana is seen rocking on the Mayan calendar in one of these booby trap areas. And at the end of the film, he's stood on it where there's 9 aliens all in a circle.
Hmm.
But basically, if you start looking at this film and the messages in it, for instance, there's a scene where Indiana Jones is on the search for the crystal skull, the alien crystal skull, and it turns out that the crystal skull is with a man called Orion, right? And so Orion sounds quite similar to Orion.
No.
Yeah. But incidentally, Orion has 6 men with him. Basically, these are the guardians of the crystal skull.
Yeah.
And obviously, 6 men plus Orion makes 7, and the 7 stars in Orion's belt. 7 stars in the constellation of Orion.
There you go.
And incidentally, the guardian of the skull, Orion, when Indiana pulls him forward, is what looks like a human being, but he's got a third eye in the middle of his forehead. So obviously there's something symbolic going on there. But incidentally, you look into it further, and you'll realise that the whole film is essentially the journey of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the characters, you've got Indiana Jones, and if you think my hypotheses of Diana being Isis, you've got Indiana.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is essentially the Holy Ghost. Is the Holy Ghost, you know, like the angel Gabriel touches the woman or whatever.
Yeah.
And Indiana's partner, who he makes his son with, is Mary Williams. So you've got the name Mary for the mother. Right? And then the other person riding with him is this is the guy who goes crazy, because he's got the crystal skull for a certain amount of time. But he's a chap called Ox from England. And funnily enough, Isis was always accompanied by an ox. Right?
Yeah.
But then the actual Indiana's son, Indiana and Mary's son, is called Williams.
There we go. Isn't that
so
nice?
So basically, in this film, you've got this... there's four of them, but it's a trinity because Indiana himself represents the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Or the Holy Ghost, if you want to call it that. And he's the one who impregnates Mary Williams. But, I mean, it gets even weirder in the sense of there's a scene where Indiana Jones falls into the mud, for instance, and Williams, the son, chucks a serpent rope to him. It's a live snake, but uses it as a serpent rope, and obviously the serpent rope is in Mayan prophecies.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got this thing going all the way through it, and basically there's a scene where, at the start of the film, where they're on the search, these communists and Indiana are on the search for an alien in a box, and they find this box, and on the box is an X.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously referencing Planet X. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that film has got so much like symbolism in it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you look into Indiana as a state as well in America, you'll find that Indiana has the Olympic flame as its logo, as its flag.
There you go. Stars
going around it.
Hmm.
It gets weird as well. I discovered something about Audi cars the other day. For instance, if you think about Audi and they've got the four rings, like the Olympic rings.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously Audi, Au is with in French. Mm-hmm. So Audi is with die. And it's as far as I, it's like, you know, this the four rings is in the fourth circle, we're with die. You could read it like that, you don't have to.
Of course, yeah. Audi, yeah, that's very interesting.
It permeates everything.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. You know, and I want to just go back a little bit to a few very interesting connections along the line here, because you mentioned that Ben-Hur got 11 Oscars, right?
Yeah.
Charlton Heston is involved in that one, and what is the the previous version of I Am Legend? That's the Omega Man. Have you seen that?
I've not seen that. I'm not aware of that film, no.
Take a look at that. That's Charlton Heston in there, and especially...
Omega Point.
Yeah, of course, and Omega, of course, that goes back to time or Kronos or even Saturn or the Lord, you know, Omega, the Time Lord. But anyway, look at some of the symbolism in regards to enlightenment that this man represent there, in regards to that he is the man from the light, and everyone else, the profane, the unenlightened are darker and they can only go out at night, etc. It's a very ancient theme running throughout that movie, but especially at the end, and look at the importance of when he lies in this pool of water at the cross with his arms stretched out, and the one thing that saves the rest of the civilization is this man's blood. I mean, it's incredible. The Christ symbolism in some of these those movies with Charlton Heston even are incredible. There's another one, the man from Khartoum or something, that constantly refer to Charlton Heston as the Christ in that movie, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because talking about films, it's obvious that a particular role one person will play is continued in other roles down the line.
Yeah,
of course. What I mean? In the way that Hollywood works, for instance, like this chap in Indiana Jones, for instance, who's called Ox, which is a symbol for Osiris, who travels with Isis in the car in Indiana Jones. It's John Hurt, and obviously the personifying John Hurt is Osiris in this film. And yet, if you think back in time to the very first Alien film, it was John Hurt who gave birth to the alien, if you want to call it that.
That's right.
You know what I mean? It's the and obviously the connections with Orion and stuff. It's all pretty it's all tangled.
Of course, in John Hurt, he was the one, the man subjected to all the terror in 1984.
1984, yeah, definitely.
And after that film, of course, he pops up as the, I guess we could call it the mind control, the brain control, or your one who turned over to the other side in V for Vendetta as the dark, you know, lord of that political party there, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's very interesting, and Jay Kotze obviously has gone into a lot of this what he calls composite characters, and there's a whole story there that he's brought out some very interesting connections in regards to how these some of these actors are indeed involved in the roles that they're playing. Also,
yeah, I mean it's strange. I mean, like for instance, you can this is the nature of the work I do. Basically, I'm essentially an internet researcher who makes the connections, and you know I go looking for them essentially.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, for instance, you know the whole idea of Project Bluebeam.
Yeah, of course.
Which, released by Serge Monast. They make a mention to the idea that holographic technology is going to be used as part of projecting, like, you know, imagery onto the upper ionosphere of the planet, into the sky.
Just for those who don't know, give us a small caption of Project Blue Book for those who don't know.
Project Blue Beam. It was it's essentially it was research that was released by Serge Monast in the 1990s. Incidentally, a few weeks after he released the information, he died mysteriously of a heart attack.
Mm.
But basically, Project Bluebeam is essentially the idea that there's going to hoax something on the size of a biblical second coming, and it'll start off with an engineered financial crash. And it was going to end up spiraling to environmental problems, hoax discoveries around the world that throw religion into a contradiction, like, for instance, the lost tomb of Jesus. And then from that, it was going to essentially get to the point where people were hearing the voice of God in each other's heads. So, yeah. For instance, you talk about suicide bombers who are saying they've been hearing the voice of God. Is this technology that's doing this stuff?
Yeah.
But basically... Yeah, they were referring to hearing the voice of God in one's head, and then to top it all off, they were going to, you know, project massive imagery, or whatever you want to call it, onto the upper ionosphere of the Earth to, you know, essentially recreate something on the scale of a biblical second coming or an alien invasion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a long document, and you can find it on the internet if you you search for it, and you'll find that a lot of what's written, and I think it was written back in 1992, potentially,
mm-hmm.
A lot of it is essentially coming true. There's a lot of it on there that you could put a tally next to. But basically, yeah, as I was saying, going into the Project Bluebeam stuff, and you start thinking to yourself, have they got the technology to do this, to do what they say they're going to do? And for instance, this is just like one angle. There's multiple angles where I found weird synchronicities. But for instance, if you look into 3D holographic technology, and... I basically discovered that the very first public display of 3D holographic technology was in the worldwide stage production of War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember that War of the Worlds, this was going around all the arenas in the world, essentially, like Australia, in Britain, in America.
Mm-hmm.
But War of the Worlds was obviously read out on the radio in the very early 1900s. And the population of England believed that an alien invasion was actually taking place when it wasn't.
Yeah.
So it's basically, you know, a false flag alien invasion, if you want to call it that, when it was read over the radio.
Yeah.
But basically I started looking into, for instance, who were they actually, turning into a hologram during this War of the Worlds stage show. And basically this, you know, the very first public demonstration of 3D holographic technology in the War of the Worlds, and they were... using the actor Richard Burton to do this. And I don't know if you know about Richard Burton, but Richard Burton was also one of the main characters in the film 1984.
Really? No.
So do you know what I mean? You can like draw this lineage from the very first use of public holographic technology to the film 1984 and to War of the Worlds.
Sorry to interrupt, I just got to mention also that because we were talking about Cleopatra Caesar before, and Richard Burton actually plays the role of Marcus Antonius or Mark Anthony in Cleopatra, the movie. But anyway,
right,
interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. Hmm.
incidentally, like, for instance, if he was looking into the idea of have they got the technology to beam the voice of God into someone's head, when I was particularly looking at this was probably about 4 months ago, so I can't quote it exactly, but there's an article appeared on the Guardian website, and it was in the Guardian newspaper as well, and it was referring to this advertising campaign that had started in New York City.
Yep.
And what was happening, when people were walking down the street, and then they was hearing this voice in their head that said something like, this isn't your imagination, this is real. And obviously, people kept walking down this section of the street, and people getting pissed off. They were like, why on earth, you know, is this thing happening in my head when I walk past this section of the street?
Yeah.
And one person was saying, you could have, like, you know, this is invasion of privacy, because you could have, for instance, Nike beaming Just Do It into your head.
Oh, yeah.
So what it turned out, anyhow, was that above on a billboard, there was an advertisement for a TV show called Paranormal State. And behind it was a little black box that was shooting ultrasonics down to the ground.
Mm.
So when people were walking through this trigger area, they was having beamed using ultrasonics into their head, you know, this message. And, I mean, incidentally, if you think about deaf kids, for instance, deaf children can go and swim with dolphins and they can hear them because the dolphins use ultrasonics.
Mm.
So this technology essentially probably could, you know, allow deaf people to hear. It's using ultrasonics like the dolphins.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I was looking into the company who did this advertising campaign on the Guardian website, and the company who did it was a company called Blue Blast Media.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you've got Project Blue Beam, and then you've got this advertising company called Blue Blast Media.
Yeah.
Does that not sound very similar?
Oh,
and
of course.
So, I went and did a hunt on the internet as to Blue Blast Media, and you'd expect if it was a big advertising company that they would have this, you know, fantastic website with this fantastic new technology they've got, and all they've got is one big logo.
Hmm.
Almost like the company doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a front company or whatever.
Yeah.
Sending out signals.
I've got to make a post about that as well. As I say, I've never got the time to pull this stuff together, but I do my best.
Well, you're doing a great job here, and I also, of course, want to mention the obvious connection that the use of blue, or why they use the blue,
the
blue color. I mean, this goes back to, we could look at the blue in the flag of Israel. We can look at which connect with Zion, but more prominently, we can look at the Blue Lodge within Freemasonry, which. You know, this is very prominent within that. So,
the blue ring in the Olympics, the blue Olympic mascot,
the water again, and all of that.
Yeah, everywhere you go, you'll find the blue.
We're going to take a break right here and continue talking more with Rick Clay in our members section. Don't forget to check out his blog, thecosmicmind.blogspot.com. Many more articles up there for you to dive into. We're going to continue talking more about Project Bluebeam, the potential fake alien invasion, and also how new weaponry and methods of advertisement literally can put voices in your head. We'll discuss the global coverage of the Wi-Fi system, the cell phone, and the Tetra masts that are going up everywhere. And more importantly, we'll also discuss the different levels of reality and much more in the member section. Head on over to redicecreations.com and click on subscribe to find out how you can sign up and get instant access to our member section. I also want to mention that our new forum is now up and running. Rediceforum.com will get you there. And remember that if you're a member and want to join the forum, log into the member section and click on Red Ice Forum at the top to sign up for an account. Thank you very much for listening, and to producer Fredrik Palmgren, we'll return with more Rick Clay after this break. But to round up this segment, here is a tune called System by the old band that Rick was in, called FULC. This is Henrik Palmgren. Take care. Talk more after this break.
What you want, do what you need, I'll give it back, it's all the same to me. like a cross, they'll take me, break me, drag me back across, they'll